Let's all welcome Brian West now from the Oak Ridge National Lab. I think you're going to like what he has to share with you. Brian?
Thanks, Bobby. I'm really pleased to be here. This is my third ethanol meeting, and first time I'm on the podium. I'm really excited to be here. So as Bobby said, I worked on DOE's mid-level blends program. Maybe you've heard of it. I have to hold that down. There we go. We did a wide range of studies, mid-level blends or intermediate ethanol blends, E15 and E20, and you've heard a lot about that at this meeting over the last several years. We tested vehicles, small non-road engines, and all these other bullet points. I won't read to you. This presentation will be available. At the end, we did publish lots of reports and papers, and there's a full list of those at the end. And if there's any of them you would like, please send me a note, and I'll be glad to send it to you. One of the centerpieces of this program, it was a $46 million program funded by DOE. $21 million of it was the vehicle aging study that you've heard talked about. If somebody tells you they love you to the moon and back, that's about 500,000 miles. So we went to the moon and back 12 times, as you know. And now, of course, E15 is legal for 2001 and newer vehicles. So where are we now? Ethanol is our largest volume biofuel, but we're banging up against the blend wall. I don't think I need to define that. We've talked about that a lot yesterday. Over 99% of our ethanol is used in E10. So where do we go from here? E15, again, it's legal for 01 and newer vehicles. And you heard Bob Dineen say yesterday that I think 80% of the top 20 selling vehicles, the manufacturers print in the owner's manual that E15 is okay. I think it's something like 70% of all new vehicles. So that's coming along. Flex fuel is underutilized. There's a lot of room for growth there. And we heard some good ideas about how we could do that. What I want to talk about is what I think of as a better use of ethanol, and these are all good uses, these other ones, but taking advantage of that octane, instead of just bringing a sub-octane gasoline up to 87, let's make a really high-octane fuel like the racing fuel that Andy talked about and design the engines to use it, and we can do a lot better. And I'll talk about that at the end of my presentation, but first we're going to have a little bit of fun and kind of play some Mythbusters. So you've probably heard people say small engines can't run ethanol fuels. Is that true or false? And Chris Kaiser was on the podium yesterday at lunch, and I think you'll find that he and I agree a lot. The answer is it depends. If we look at carbureted small non-road engines, these are what we call non-feedback or open-loop engines. They can't adjust the fueling based on the change in fuel chemistry. And what happens is the NOx emissions go up, sometimes an awful lot, and then the CO and hydrocarbons can go down. And CO and hydrocarbons going down might not sound like a bad thing. It's actually probably a little bit of a good thing, but that's not the only thing that changes, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. So what I think you heard Chris Kaiser say is the small engine manufacturers, they can design their engines for a small range of fuels, a small change, and in fact, the certification gas for small non-road engines now is they're allowed to use E10, and they've been asking for that for a number of years. So let's talk about cert fuels a little bit. I was glad to hear Chris Grendler's remarks this morning, and he didn't say anything about Tier 3. The Tier 3 proposal is out, and we're expecting a rule any day now. But for years, all gasoline engines in the U.S. had to certify with an ethanol-free certification gas. And there's been a lot of talk about changing that cert gas since E10 is pretty much ubiquitous in the country now. So modern vehicles, and I've got an 88 Mustang there. I used to have one, but I'm considering that a modern vehicle. Anything built since the early 80s, they use closed-loop feedback control, and they adjust the fuel so that they maintain a consistent, mostly stoichiometric fuel-air equivalence ratio. So, again, they still certify on E0, but any day now, the Tier 3 rule is probably going to change that to E10 or E15. Now, the small non-road engine guys, as I indicated, they've been asking for an E10 cert fuel for years because E10 was in the field, and that's what their engines were trying to were running. And if you do I did a non-scientific survey. If you go back and look at a bunch of owner's manuals from handheld devices, small non-road engines in the late 90s, almost all of them are going to say, do not use any oxygenates. If you look at a bunch of them from the last few years, almost all of them say you can use E10. So they've designed those engines, and as Chris said yesterday, they can design their engines to use any fuel. Bob mentioned yesterday the new Kohler engine, and Chris did as well, the John Deere tractor that's a flex fuel. So you can design the engine to use any fuel. So the flex fuel tractor, of course, will use E0 or E85 or anything in between. So my advice to people, if you've got a small non-road engine, look at your manual and use the fuel that's recommended by the manufacturer. Okay, another one. Somebody stole my thunder here, but ethanol runs hotter than gasoline. Anybody ever heard anybody say that? Or maybe you've heard people say, I heard Bobby say it runs cooler. Well, which is it? Does it run hotter or does it run cooler? The answer is it depends. This is data from our small non-road engines, and this is several different engines with varying ethanol content, 0 to 20%, and you can see an increase in exhaust temperature. So that reduction in CO and hydrocarbons comes at a cost. The engine runs hotter. So the manufacturer needs to be able to design for that. Now, let's talk about our cars. The closed-loop control actually runs slightly cooler with ethanol. So here's a E0 versus E20 comparison for a Honda Accord from the mid-level blends program. And you can see on this light load drive cycle where you're maintaining stoichiometry, the E20 is the same or slightly cooler. Now, our closed-loop engines, our vehicles today, they still run open-loop once in a while. They run open-loop at wide-open throttle. They run open-loop at cold start. And so here's some wide-open throttle data. And the modern cars kind of fall into two categories, those that do apply what they've learned when they were in this closed-loop mode, so that they, if they add extra fuel because of the ethanol, they're going to also add it when they're rich. And those that do that actually run cooler. So ethanol runs cooler than gasoline when you maintain the same air-fuel equivalence ratio. For the cars that do not apply that long-term fuel trim when they're wide open, they run hotter. They run significantly hotter, some of them. And this is the reason we went to the moon and back 12 times, because there was great concern that this increased temperature was going to cause catalyst damage and lead to a lot of emissions failures. Of course, the end of the story is that we didn't find any ethanol-related emissions damage. So here's my last one. Ethanol has lower energy density than gasoline, so fuel economy is always worse. Is that true or false? Well, the energy density one's true. That's just simple chemistry. It's got that oxygen molecule in there. A gallon of ethanol, again, has about two-thirds of the energy density of a gallon of gasoline. But the fuel economy, the way we use it today, generally, yes, the fuel economy is going to go down. But what I want to talk about is what I alluded to early on is that a gallon of ethanol can displace an equal volume of gasoline if you put it in a fuel that has a really high octane number and you put it in an engine that's designed for it. So there's a lot of activity going on, a lot of excitement about downspeeding and boosting, making the engine smaller, running up the compression ratio, increasing the boost. Your engine efficiency can go up enough to offset the loss in energy density. So that's very exciting. I'm very excited about it. The optimum blend, we don't really know what that is. There's been a few papers that suggest it's around E30, but it's going to depend on engine technology and other measures you take. So I'm just going to close by asking, is renewable super premium, and that's a name I like, and I think I give Christy Moore credit for coming up with that. It might have been an accident, but it's a great name. Is that a better path for ethanol? And I'll just close by thanking DOE for their support and all the industry partners and NREL and everybody we worked with in this program. Thank you.